Hello and welcome to another episode of Hypercritical Radio brought to you by Professional Awesome. Hayden's not here today, so I get to talk first, and I'm special. I'm Mike Lewin, and we are joined by
Tyrone Giles,
Dan O'Donnell.
And today we have a special guest, and that guest is
Andy from ASM.
All right, Andy. So we've known Andy for quite some time now. I don't even know how long it is. What is this? 12 years? 11 years? Something like that. Oh my God.
That's been that long?
That's terrifying. 10 years at least. I don't know. Anyway, there's a decade in there and that's scaring me. My point being, we've known Andy for a long time. And if you've seen ASM stuff, you follow Grid Life, if you follow One Lap of America, if you follow basically anything like these things, you've seen a lot of ASM cars, and this is the man, the myth, the legend behind all of those cars. And so we met Andy quite some time ago at Map Proving Grounds event at BRI, and we had an Evo battle there, and then obviously a relationship grew from that. We brought Andy on today because Andy is doing a lot of big things. He started as just doing things on the weekend, doing things on off time, and then grew from there. So we wanted to bring Andy on and like talk through all the craziness that's happened over the last 10 years. So Andy, when we met you, you're doing a thing called 365 Racing, that's probably the most truthful name of a group of people that I've ever seen, considering you guys like raced constantly.
Yeah. 365 was started a long time ago, and pretty much we just did track days. We did autocross. We did winter ice racing. The idea there was to just drive every single day as often as possible. So that 365 Racing has it's still somewhat alive. We haven't been very active on any of the socials, but it's still there. And I still think a lot of what we do is still, goes back to that 365 Racing, belief of just driving.
And yeah. when you say we, who is the we of 365?
It's honestly just a group of people. It's kind of everyone that's kind of been with me along the way. It used to be, it still is just a bunch of like local guys that just have that same idea of just driving as often as possible. And, it's kind of grew a little further out than just this local area. We've kind of brought in people from all over. So now we have people racing with us that are from all over the US, from Texas to Alabama to the Chicago area. I mean, we got kind of just a bigger group now. It's kind of, I guess, all of those people that kind of race under the ASM umbrella.
Yeah, so you said local, right? And so what is local? Where is ASM currently?
So we're located in Plover, Wisconsin, basically Stevens Point, Wisconsin. That's kind of where it started, and from there it grew.
Yeah. And so you said that a lot of those people are still with you. I mean, obviously we know a lot of that crew. Obviously it's evolved over time. You brought in new people and some of those guys still come out occasionally. Just shout out some of those people I'm sure that some of the listeners will know those people, but they've been racing with you forever.
Yeah. 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 I mean, we've got like the RS Motors guys over there. They've kind of been racing with us for a lot. A couple local buddies around here, Eric and Mike Vita, they that's probably, I'd say, one of the more root of 365 Racing. We started doing like chump car stuff together and just ice racing and just a lot of local events. Those are probably the OGs of 365 Racing.
Sure. So, yeah, and then you said you obviously do track days, you do autocrosses, and a lot of those, past just being there and doing them. Like, the other thing, you guys, like, actually run them. You created events for yourself so that you could actually run them.
Right. Yeah. We, when we started, there was a couple clubs doing events, but they weren't either that close or maybe not that often. So we just decided to start putting on our own events, and we created a CWSEC is the club, Central Wisconsin Sports Car Club, where we did a lot of autocross track days and ice race stuff.
And was your job doing motorsports stuff back then, or did you have like a real day job? How'd that go?
Yeah, that was when I was still doing IT work. I worked at a small computer store, just doing kind of IT for small businesses. And then I would just, at the time it was just a hobby. I wanted to go drive, do autocross stuff. I really didn't know what I was doing when it came to working on cars. It was just more self-taught and had to figure it out out of necessity. So, yeah, that's where, you know, you work 9 to 5, come home, and you do start doing car stuff during the week. And then the weekends, you know, we find events to do.
I wonder, like, is there any overlap? So Mike and I, we met while he was going to college at Purdue, and we lived on the street called Ledyard, which had a whole bunch of car guys from the Purdue Automotive Performance Association. And so it was basically like 8 or 9 of us living in a townhouse where everyone would either go to class, they'd go to their day job. And then when we got home, it's like, well, now what do? We just work on cars. Is that kind of like mirror what you guys did, or was everyone in their own little individual area and then came together?
Yeah. No, it was pretty much the same thing. You know, we would work, and we'd often find a lot of projects that we'd work on together. So either we'd go to someone's house and spend, from 6 o'clock till 10 o'clock, Monday through Friday, we'd, build at the time we were building a chump car. That was probably the most notable thing that brought us together. We built a BMW E30 that we went endurance racing with, but we would just work on it every day after work. And
so we're just a bunch of kids that never grew up. So that's kind of what it sounds like.
Really,
coming down to or fighting not to grow up right now.
Yeah, it's a rough thing. It is a rough thing. I mean, I think the story is very common, though. Like, I mean, I think that some people, the hard part is that everybody, a lot of these stories, people start getting families and moving away, and then they don't work as closely. And now, luckily, you can, even if you live further away, you can still work a little bit closer. Like, I know that Alex Moss and stuff isn't exactly close. Brendan Renbeck's not exactly close anymore, but they still run with you. Obviously, Alex a lot. He runs a lot. Mm-hmm. And you guys are just still, it's a concerted effort to keep working together on these projects and stuff, which is super cool, given that there's a lot of longevity there. There's a lot of, history there. But you guys just kept pushing and pushing and pushing to work on these things and stick together, because you realize that it's a good team. Like, this is a good system. You have the right people, and you want to keep doing it.
Right. Yeah. You get the right people involved, and it's kind of amazing what you can accomplish.
So then, if you were working in an IT job, and ASM Now, Andy Smedegaard Motorsports, right? That's, I assume, is your, like, beyond 40-hour a week, it feels like a 100-hour a week job that you have now?
Yeah. It started off as just a little side hustle I would do after work. I'd still work my normal 40-hour a week job doing IT stuff. And then, started doing a little bit of side hustle stuff. People would just ask me to do, can you do a clutch job on my Evo or, whatever. So I would start taking one or two jobs a week. And that started to get a little overwhelming. And I was able to actually convince my boss at the time to let me go part-time doing IT work. So I was working 30 hours IT work and then another 30 hours doing side hustle, stuff. And then that obviously got overwhelming. And then I eventually just had to make the leap to do what I do now full-time.
And that, and just so everyone's referenced, that started like, when you were doing that out of the house, right?
Yeah. At the time I had a, house in the country with that had a decent sized garage. So it was just, doing it out of my, basically just a big garage. Wasn't anything special.
And you got a lot done there.
Yeah.
I mean, you got a shit ton done. I drove for reference. I drove the Cobra up there to do ice racing, and I did some work in the garage, and we got it ready there to do the filming and everything and the driving and all that. And, by any stretch of imagination, it wasn't huge. It was like a 3-4 car garage, but obviously you have your own cars that were taking up space in there as well.
Right.
And stuff like that. You basically had two bays, kind of what it felt like.
At best, I had two bays. I used one side, which was kind of like a oversized 2-car garage. I'd use that for storage. And then the other side, which is kind of like the single work bay with a bit of workshop to
right.
it.
So, yeah.
And then it just had a little, like, it had one of those Max Jacks hoists, so like a half hoist with like a 9-foot ceiling. I mean, it worked. It was, it's better than probably most people's normal garages that they work in the, on their own cars, but from a shop perspective, it was kind of
inadequate. inadequate. But I mean, you still got a lot done there. Obviously, like I said, I brought the Cobra up. I stayed in the house and everything with you guys before we did the ice racing and everything, which was obviously super cool. You were, you were willing to offer that, and it was a smaller garage, but the amount of work that you got done there, and obviously, you know, we have our own Evo for Time Attack. You have your Evo, you know, you were working on that at the time as well. And then you also obviously taking on all these other projects for, you know, friends, you were still doing that. You were doing some of the one lap stuff at that time as well. And so there's just a lot of projects happening, all kind of coming out of this kind of, you know, one and a half bay spot.
Right. You really do not need a big garage or a big, huge, you know, shop with lifts and all this stuff to really go do what we do. You know, you can make anything work.
Yeah. I try to tell people, like, the Evo, like our Evo now, is in, like, it's with Grant, it's at the shop, but it's really in like a 1.5 bay room that's filled with some other stuff. And really, it's only been on the lift once, and that was
it's
to
in
scan
a closet
it.
With a bunch of shit.
It's in a closet. And so,
with shit on top of shit.
Yeah. There's a full race car stuff, right? There's, like, you know, it's everything you need to run a race car, which is a lot of stuff, and it's still got tools in it and stuff. And so we, you know, try to use our space as best we can, but it's only been on a lift, like a real lift once. And that was, we were trying to scan it, which was an endeavor that, you know, before we had our own scanning tools, which didn't work out. But yeah. I mean, that's the case. Like, ours is very similar in size to what you were running out of there. So, like, when people are like, oh, I don't have enough room, it's like, well, I mean, kind of do it. I mean, I'm not going to say it's fun. I'm not going to say it's ideal.
It's
going to
be a little, more work, but I mean, you just do what you can with what you have. I mean, that's all you can do.
And you got that Max Jack setup, which obviously did help. It's only 4 foot, but I mean, you did the first case swap in that, right? You were doing case swaps for the S2000s in that spot and all that. And, like, you can do it.
Yep, for sure.
Well, a question, like, do you only work on race cars now, or do you work on, or, like, have you only worked on, like, sports cars, or do you work on like a Camry or something that comes in and needs an oil change?
I've been pretty fortunate enough to, like, be able to really get to pick what I get to work on. So yeah, we don't really do any normal car stuff. I mean, not usually. There's the very rare circumstance, maybe a, you know, relative or something, I'll have to put new tires on their minivan or something. I don't know. But generally, yeah, we try to focus mostly on track specific cars. I've even been trying to stay away from, like, just performance street cars for kind of several reasons. Usually it's sometimes not necessarily the clientele I'm shooting for. And then also just emission stuff. I mean, all the emission stuff that's been cracking down lately, it's almost not worth it. And I'd rather focus on cars that have real, like, a purpose, you know, or a goal that's more track specific.
Right. I mean, the emission stuff is definitely getting a little scary there, and I can completely understand that. You don't want to be on the wrong side. And yeah, that's a completely different problem, but yeah, I mean, it's nice. It definitely is nice that you're, you know, at least I think it's nice that you don't necessarily have to do brake jobs, right? You're not a lube shop. You're not a brake shop or whatever. You're working. I mean, it seems like, at least when the trailer rolls up and you guys have your spread out and everything, it really does seem like you've got plenty of cars to work on in a day. So
yeah, there's no shortage of work lately anyways.
And plus,
is it just you?
I got one full-time person, and then my sister's been kind of working here part-time. So two and a half.
Well, that's good. I mean, and your sister's great at that too. So it's like, you know, that she's quite helpful and all that, so that's good.
Yeah, for sure.
I want to talk a little bit about, like, you know, we talked a little bit about that transition, right, where you were going from kind of like a home shop, and then finally you had to jump. It was like, obviously you were working those two jobs, you were just trying to make everything work. Has it always been, I know that we talked before, but, you know, for the listeners, you know, benefit, we had talked that you kind of wanted to go that direction, but what kind of pushed you there? You know, obviously you were working in IT. How did you start in IT, and then what made you want to turn around and then actually have, you know, a legit shop space and make that change?
Well, the IT stuff kind of left me a little unfulfilling a bit. And I've really liked doing car stuff, and I kind of got really hungry to learn all this car stuff and, you know, all the different aspects of building a car. And it just kind of happened that I had a lot of people wanting work done, and it just kind of, I don't know, it just led me down that path. And I wanted something more for myself when I was working in IT, as I'm working for someone else, right? So I, like, wanted to create my own business. And at the time, I'm getting all this car, you know, work requests, and just seemed fun to do, you know. I feel kind of like, who wouldn't want to get to work on, you know, race cars every day?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, like, it's a... you know, it kind of seems like, you know, you were doing the 365 racing and you guys were all racing together. Did it just come from necessity? Like, obviously, if you're going to race that much, you're going to break everything. And so you were kind of fixing your own stuff, and then you started fixing your friend's stuff, and then it grew from there, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's where what forced me to kind of learn how to build a car is just, I wanted to go racing, and I needed to, you know, I couldn't afford to pay someone else to build me a race car. So I had to figure it out myself. And yeah, that's what kind of started the path of learning all this stuff. And then, you know, I'd go to events and we'd do pretty decent. And obviously that helps build a good reputation. And then I just started having people ask me to do whatever I did on my car, do it on their car. So that's, I guess, how most of my business started.
Has it since become a business, made the hobby less fun at all? Or is it like every day, is it like, oh, great, I get to get covered in oil.
Kind of.
Lovely.
It definitely has made it a little more of a job, and it's maybe not necessarily the work that I do that has made it that way. It's just the stress and all the stuff of running a business that has kind of more taken the toll than, you know, I still enjoy working on cars. And in fact, I wish I could just work on cars, right. But you have everything else to do that, you know, comes to running a business. You've got, you know, accounting stuff to do and the billing and the ordering and, you know, dealing with people and the logistics of everything. That's what probably adds up more than anything.
Yeah, that's a common, you know, it's a common refrain is that people do things that they want to do, and then running a business just sucks. Like, right. there's no way around it. Like, it's not the fun part about this. They want to do the fun thing. So many people, we know that run businesses like that. It's like they need like an office manager to handle all of these things, and then they do what they're good at, right? But that costs money. It's hard.
Right, and you want an office manager to do it kind of your way, but it's hard to, I guess that's something you'd have to train someone to do it your way. And
right.
I don't know. It's,
we're not A-type personalities or competitive or anything. Not right, at all.
Exactly.
Nobody's competitive. Yeah.
I like the working on cars shit I hate.
the one person. On, yeah. It's
no,
weird.
I'm with Devin. I don't like getting dirty.
Yeah, I don't. I like doing the car stuff. I like researching and stuff to figure out what's next. Right.
You don't have to get dirty, but I really enjoy like the learning process of building the cars, you know, learning how to do, you know, I don't know, from the wiring and tuning. And I just like keep pushing that envelope of, you know, what you can do and figure out.
I learned idle control on the Link ECU today, like literally that Mike and I and Grant were all out in the garage and like, holy crap, it is fun when you learn something new. Yeah, I mean, sure. It was really like connecting some dots and it's like, oh, this is how it's different than the AM Infinity. This is why it wasn't working right. It's like, oh, this is amazing. And now the desire to get it to start like a, you know,
OE car.
OEM production right. car, even though it's a race car, like, oh, the pull for that is very strong.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's kind of what I really enjoy, the tuning and the whole computer side of it. For one, you don't have to, you know, lift anything heavy. You don't have to get dirty. And I don't know. It's super fun to dive into that stuff.
Yeah. I mean, and so along that line, let's talk about some of these, the well-known cars that you've been a part of and you've kind of like helped develop, obviously pretty extensively. I think one that's, you know, one thing that you've done that's extremely well-known at this point is obviously a K-Swap. So K-Swap S2000s. Mm-hmm. Obviously you've done, how many have you done of those at this point?
I haven't been counting. We've probably done close to like 30-ish or so, like in-house. Right. I've started selling kind of like full K-Swap packages where we'll basically assemble the engine, get all the swap components on, you know, convert the engine harness to run the K-Series, like basically ship out a full drop-in, you know, crate engine. We've probably done about 10 to 15 of those.
Very cool. And so that's something that the customer would install themselves, but you basically subbed it so they're ready to go.
Right. We get it to the point you literally just have to drop this engine in. It's got everything on it already.
That's super cool. Yeah, that's a neat thing to do. And obviously you guys, you know, if you're pulling engines in that often and stuff, and that's really neat. If you've got that all figured out. And obviously the kits, I mean, the end products obviously perform well. We know that. We've seen it in multiple different scenarios that they perform well, you know, from the K-Swaps now, then the next iteration of just the K-Swap, let's talk about Alex's car, right, where run that car. It's been through a lot. It's been street mod car. It's been one lap of America car. It's been all over the place, right? So,
yeah, that car has kind of been the key shop development car. You know, that's the one that started the whole K swap for us. We did the K swap, ran it for I think a season, kind of on a stock engine, ran good. We went to like a build up, high compression, you know, 300 horsepower K24, ran it like that. Decided we need more power. Put a stock K24 back in and fabbed up a supercharger kit for it. Ran it like that for a season. Decided we need more power. Put a turbo kit on it. I think that was kind of the last engine iteration of the car. It was just a K24 with a turbo making about 500 horse. Still wanted to go faster. And then that's where the whole DCT swap stuff started, which is what we've been working on for like the last two seasons, doing the dual clutch trans. So that car's just been through so many phases. Constantly the car that's probably pushing my own limits more than its limits.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot going on with that. There's a lot going on in that car.
You can hear the slight sadness in your voice. Like, it was hopeful, then it came back down to reality, then it came back up to hopeful. It's pretty good.
It's an exhausting car.
Yeah, I mean, yes. But you've had a lot of success along the way, but you've worked very hard. And I don't know if everyone behind the scenes has seen all the things. Like, how many DCTs have you gone through?
We're probably on trans number 5, I think. We've had a bunch of weird issues, and I've been able to maybe fix the trans. But I think we've at least broken 3. I've used
parts. And that's the baskets mostly, or is that other components?
No, the clutch basket stuff I've been able to fix. So all those clutch baskets, I was able to fix those. Okay. But there was other issues with the trans that was like, it was knocking off the magnets in the shift forks.
Okay. Yeah, that's common in the Evos.
Yeah.
Evo 10s, yeah.
Right. There was a firmware for the controller we were using where it would essentially just slam the gears excessively hard. And it would somehow knock those magnets off. Which can be fixed. I still have those transmissions. I just haven't really dove into it enough to try to go through and fix them.
Sure. I mean, there is fixes. Dan, what's the fix for the Evo 10? Like, what do they use?
Super glue.
Weld them.
Yeah.
It's super common for the DCT and the Evo 10s for the magnets to fall off just in normal use. And Datsun makes a different magnet attachment arm that you can remove the factory one and bolt in the Datsun one, and then they don't fall off.
Sure.
But it's funny you talking about breaking 3 transmissions. I was just listening to another podcast that was talking about how doctors have experimented on themselves to try and find cures for stuff, and because they won't, you know, let them do tests and stuff on other humans. So these doctors, you know, after hours, you know, using lab equipment, stuff like give themselves diseases or give themselves, one guy ran a catheter into his heart and like got fired and stuff. So it's funny to me that this podcast broke down that over the last 200 years, all the known major experiments that were done on doctors, 7 of them won Nobel Prizes. And 6 of them killed themselves. So,
okay. All right.
It's like, oh, that's wow. That's like, we're not here saving lives. But they were saying, yeah, it's like a 50-50 chance you'll get a Nobel Prize or kill yourself. And that's kind of what we're doing with our engines and transmissions and all that stuff.
Man, those are extremes.
Yeah, that got a little dark anyway. But yeah, all the issues that you have with the DCT, I'm not sure that like anybody outside of, you know, people who are following that realize some of the challenges you guys had with the controller and just getting everything right, and then all the transmissions and all that stuff. So, like, you know, if you had to just, you know, don't think too hard because it might be depressing. But in terms of the time that you and Alex have put into that car, how long would you say you've just invested in the DCT as just, you know, the base DCT swap?
I honestly would think it's got to be like 500-ish hours. I mean, there maybe even more. There was so So many late nights. There's a couple like weeks there. Like, I feel like that's all I did.
I sent a controller. Like, you guys were about to go to a race and you're like, can you send a controller? Like, cause I obviously had one on the shelf and I'm like, yeah, sure. Like, you're just finding these problems that you shouldn't have.
Yeah. There was some problems that were probably maybe, you know, more are caused by us. Maybe we, I think in when we asked for that controller for you, I think it ended up being something I did. I mean, there's definitely mistakes that were caused by me along the way. And, you know, some were issues just with, you know, base because it was just such a new product. But yeah, lots of late nights, lots of, I don't know, lots of just work.
the controller and everything, like, you guys were one of the first to really put it into an environment where you're trying to, you know, let's use one lap.
Mm-hmm.
One lap, for those that, you know, do you want to explain one lap to people? I mean, obviously you're the one that does it, so go for it.
So One Lap of America is a week long, almost an endurance race. You have to take your street car and drive it from racetrack to racetrack. No support vehicles allowed, no towing allowed. But you have basically a track day every single day at a different racetrack across the US, and you're driving 500 to 700 miles every day between racetracks. And each day you have a usually two events where you're doing like a three lap timed segment around a track. Sometimes you also have drag, like a drag race event and an autocross. But there's, I think, about 16 total events throughout the week that you're doing. So you're driving about 4,000 miles total with 14 different events. And it's all in this one car that you have to, you know, whatever you can bring with you. No support vehicles or anything allowed. So you can tow your own trailer if you want, and haul your own tools, haul your own spares. But yeah, this car you're basically living out of for 7 days. So that's what we did with Super K.
Yeah, so we'd call that a good test of reliability, drivability, and speed, right? I think that's fair.
Yep. You have to be reliable because you cannot redo any of the events. If you have a blown intercooler coupler on one of the events, that's it. You don't get to retry, and every single lap counts. So it's not like the best. They do these three lap segments. It's not the best of each of one of the laps. It is all three laps combined. So every single time you go out for a timed session, that counts.
Yeah. And then obviously, like you said, you would have to drive between events. So it's five to 700 miles
every day.
And so, yep. Right. And a Super K on E85?
Super K is on E85 with a small gas tank. It's like 9 to 10 gallons.
So what kind of fuel economy does it get? Because that's very important to me.
Towing, it only gets probably like 18 to 19 at best.
You're towing a small.
No, that's not bad.
It's probably closer to 15 to 18.
And that's towing a trailer with what? Tire? What's on it? What's on that trailer? It's a small trailer. It's not like a big trailer, just so people know. It's a small trailer.
Yeah, it's a kind of a small little trailer. We haul our one spare on it. That's another rule in the event is you have to compete on one set of street tires, 200 treadwear street tires. You don't get to change tires or anything. So we have like the one spare, all the tools I could possibly fit, spare parts, you know, plus you have your own gear. You know, you have to bring all the stuff that you want to, you know, clothes. You have to bring your helmet, all that stuff. So, I mean, it's a cramped, it's a tight fit, and we have an S2000, which doesn't have a lot of room, and the trunk is not usable anymore. So everything we have is either in the trailer or we shove it behind the roll bar.
How's the AC in it?
AC? Zero AC. Barely have, we have heat, and it's kind of, that's one of the downsides of this car. We always have heat. There's always no way to keep off necessarily. Because it's again half race car, and there's no sound deadening on the firewall, and there's a turbocharger by the passenger foot. It's just blowing hot air all the time. It's pretty brutal.
Yeah, that's.
This sounds like reverse Everest, like exceptionally challenging, just not cold. And like, why do people do this? But it sounds awesome at the same time.
Right. Yes.
It is an odd torture that we do to ourselves.
And you've competed for how many years in that event?
I've done it for six years.
And so it was, what were the cars originally? So you've done Super K, obviously we know that, but what else?
I started doing it with Ronnie and Brandon from RS Motors with their Evo. Did that for actually 4 years. So maybe I've done it for 7 years now.
Yeah. Time flies. Jesus.
Yeah. Yep. We did it for with the Evo 4 years, and then yeah, the S2 with three.
Very cool. That's very cool. And so in that process, obviously you said you took the DCT and that car, and how was that whole process with what was the result, and how was that whole process with the car? Because that's what, you know, we were talking about how you spend so much time on the DCT and all that stuff, and you guys have probably more time on it than almost anybody, especially in the United States, that's using it for, you know, something that you would drive on the street, but also something that you do is on a racetrack. So
yeah,
how did that go, and then how did the event end up?
So the first year with the DCT and the S2, we honestly did not think we would even finish. We thought we were going to break something within the first day. That event we went into, so I don't want to say unprepared. At the time, it was so new, and we were still like kind of trying to do these development stuff. And every time we'd go to the track, we would try something and it would break. So we'd go back and fix it, like try it again. It was like a couple weeks before one lap, and we did one event at NCM. We're like, well, if the car doesn't break at this event, let's just try it. Let's take the car to one lap and we'll just see what happens. And it was the first event that car went to a track day and did not break. So we're like, all right, let's
take this
car to one lap.
it was destiny.
Yeah. And it still drove, it drove well on track. It drove like shit on the street. And it was probably mostly due to, you know, the electronics and stuff we're using are not designed to control a dual clutch transmission. So like your downshift blip, for example, when you downshift, you need to add RPM. So we just had a very rudimentary blip, and it was like a one setting blip. So if you're trying to downshift smoothly on the street, it would blip too much because it's set to downshift when you're on the track, you know, full hard braking and downshifting at 6,000 RPMs, it would ask for a bunch of blip. So on the street, it would do the same thing, but it would be really jerky. So we just kind of suffered through it for the first year. And surprisingly, every event we kept going to on the first year with the DCT, it just didn't break. So we kept doing events and it just made it through the whole first year of one lap. And we ended up with a second place overall, which was way beyond our belief. We didn't think we would finish yet podium. So that was the first year. And then we used obviously a whole year to the next year. We got to develop it even further, got to really focus on a lot of drivability stuff and just refinement. And we went into the second year again, kind of with the expectations of probably breaking, but you always have the hope of winning. And the second year we started off the event really well. I think by like day three, we were actually winning the event overall, and we stayed really tight. It was actually a battle with Tom O'Gorman. He was driving a ZR1, and it was just a battle all the way to the very last event with him for first or second place. And we ended up second place, which obviously you want to win, but second place was still, again, further than our expectations. But the car drove pretty well that second year.
You should be clear. How many points ahead were you both ahead of the third place team?
Yeah, we were, I can't remember points, but I think it was like over 300 points over third place. And it's out of, I don't know how many total points there were, like 4,000 or something. So.
Right.
3,000 or 4,000. So, I mean, yeah, the first and second, it was a battle with Tom the entire week, back and forth.
Yeah. It was a good 10% above everybody else. Like, it's not, you know, when that happened and everything, and obviously Tom's a fantastic driver. People know Tom. We've talked to Tom, and fantastic driver. You're a fantastic driver. You know, Alex is a fantastic driver. And that was a crazy battle. But to lose to Tom in that car, I think is absolutely an impressive feat with a car that not only did you guys build yourselves, but you guys were driving yourselves. Obviously, it's not so much fun to drive. And let's be honest, if it was any other year, and it was not Tom, you would have blown the competition away.
Right. Yeah, probably. And it's been kind of a goal of mine to win one lap with like a home built car, because that's never happened. Almost every single year for, I don't know, the past 30 years, it's always been like new, like less than 5 year old, you know, high end sports cars. It's a, you know, like a GT3 or a, you know, ZR1 or a, the GTRs were there for a while, but like, it's never been won by like a 10 plus year old, you know, home built, you know, highly modified import.
Yeah.
I don't know. We've kind of promised ourselves we're not doing it again in Super K. So I don't know. Maybe we'll have to find something else, but everything wants changes. To take it back and try again. But I know I'm pushing my luck with that car.
Pontiac Hero. I want to see it done.
Oh God. Yeah. Please stop. Actually, let's do it. It'd be super cool.
No one's stopping you.
We could put an LS4, you know, the LS4 front wheel drive one in the back and just call it. That'd be perfect. There you go.
It'd
be
here he goes.
It'd be impossible to drive. Here he goes. Thanks, Devin. That's very helpful. That's very helpful. But I think like you said, it's always been won by these supercar, like the definition of a supercar, right? It's always been won by the definition of a supercar by a pretty dang good driver. And to do it in a car that's obviously, you know, almost 20 years old now with technology that you kind of built into it, right? You built into it. And a DCT isn't that new, but obviously it's a newer swap now because it takes, you know, it's lagging. But you guys put all that effort in. Obviously the aero's on point, the car is on point, suspension's on point, and you add the DCT, the turbo, all that stuff. Like it's a well-built car. It's not exactly the best car to drive around on the street, which is, you know, you took, it's not, like I said, it's not as nice as driving the ZR1 or anything, but in terms of performance and being able to actually accomplish and finish an event like that is extremely difficult.
Yep. And that's what makes it more rewarding. People have asked me what I want to do one lap in next year. And I just cannot get myself to get excited about doing one lap in something super cushy. Like it's got to be something that's hard.
There's something wrong with you, but that's okay.
It's what's the challenge in doing it in a, you know, I don't know.
Do you think that if you, what, like, so let's say you wanted to, you know, you wanted to Cadillac it and you wanted to enjoy your drive for once, what car would you choose then with the history of, you know, the event and all that stuff? What would you choose?
I would probably try like a GT3.
A GT3. Okay. I mean, that's a good choice
of some form.
I know somebody with a GT2 RS.
Hmm.
Who's that? Do you think that car could take that?
GT2 RS should, yeah. And that's maybe a little faster than a GT3 on some tracks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I mean, you may know him too. And you can,
I'm sure he's not saying, you know, but kind of saying, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And he's done one lap, right? A couple times?
He has, yeah.
Oh my gosh. Maybe. I mean, I'm not saying, you know, I know the goal is to win with, you know, the car you built and all that stuff, but just get that banker in next year.
Right.
And then go back to the Super K. That's all I'm saying. Or go back to the, you know, whatever.
Just throw it out there. You know, you do what you want. You're grown. You know, we're not judging.
Yeah, you're grown, but you know. I've just got some ideas.
Drive with the heat on the entire time. That way you can feel like you're suffering a little bit.
Yeah. Just sweat it out, or roll down the windows and just be like, God, I wish these windows would roll up. I really wish these windows would roll up. That'd be terrible. Yeah. Anyway, that's again, I want people to understand from a perspective of getting a car that you built to do these things, especially with the kind of the complicated electronics and the swap and all that stuff. You know, the car is not even close really to an S2000. It's got some roots there, but you guys did all that work to make it something special and then put that package together. It just takes a lot of love. And I mean, that's all there is to it. It just takes a lot of love. And that's kind of an impressive part of showing, you know, the capabilities and kind of shows, you know, obviously what you can do for the customers.
Yep.
Wanted to transition just a little bit into Pikes Peak International. That's where we last saw you racing GLTC, and you had a whole slew of
a gaggle
of ASM cars. Like, did you imagine even, you know, 5 years ago or whatever, that's what ASM would become? Or, and is that like as cool as it looks from the outside, like having all your friends come and or
no, it's definitely nothing I imagined. I don't really know how it happened. It's just kind of slowly just kept happening. I feel it's the law of attraction. You know, you start to attract a lot of like-minded people, and the group just started growing. And I mean, I kind of started seeing it happen, but I didn't plan for it. I didn't know. It's not like I specifically wanted this to happen, and I'm grateful it happened. It's cool that I get all these cool people that come and they want to represent me, and I don't know. It really is as cool as it probably looks, I think.
There it is. That's what we want to hear.
It looks awesome. There it is. That's awesome. And so you're running GLTC, so people know, you know, from the outside. So Grid Life Touring Cup. You've been running there. You've been running S2000s. You have multiple S2000s. I don't know who owns any of those S2000s, but you've got multiple ones. They're called Trainer 1, Trainer 2, Orphan 1, Orphan 2. I don't actually know the other names, but you get the point. You keep acquiring new S2000s. Nobody knows where you're getting them from because everybody else wants to find S2000s but can't. So how many cars are you preparing right now for GLTC? And then obviously you've got some other cars that you're preparing as well for other Grid Life classes.
Yeah.
So how many are you paying for GLTC and then versus some of these other classes that you compete in?
So I might be losing count now of how many cars we're preparing for.
He's losing count, folks. Losing count.
You just put it on the table today, huh?
the three trainers to start with. Trainer one is Ronnie. Trainer two is my car. And then trainer three is the car that Tom drives.
Okay.
And then from there, every other car is pretty much a customer car owned by the customer.
Gotcha.
I think there's, so currently we have, what do we got? Three or four other customer GLTC cars. And then in the next year here, we have like another two or three that we're building for customers. So I don't know how many that is. We also have a couple like WRL endurance race S2000s, which kind of also cross over into some GLTC stuff that we support. So there's probably about 10 GLTC capable S2s that we support right now.
Yeah, that's super cool. Then, so from the outside, we, you know, just trying to understand how that all works. Obviously, you've got lots of people who are dependent on the shop to prepare their cars to get ready for a weekend, right? And when you've got mm-hmm. all these cars, not only do you have the GLCC cars, but you've got Dana, you know, I assume Robert does a little bit on his own, but you've got some of these other cars that you're also preparing. You've got the Civic, you've got the, Pikachu S2000 now. How does all that work?
We've got a couple of Time Attack cars as well. So some of the cars are cars basically I keep here at the shop with me. So I do everything on them from the prep service stuff to transport to bringing to the track and then doing trackside support. Some of them I'll do maybe little bits here and there. Like Dana, for example, does most of the things on his own car, but I kind of help him with some of the stuff sure. that either he can't do or, you know, at the track help support some of the stuff. So some of the people are a little more self-sufficient where some need maybe a little more. It's kind of, you know, whatever they want really. So I try to work with people that, you know, if they can do a lot of the stuff themselves, then they do that. And then when they need me, they just either ask for help or, you know, we'll work something out.
And in that description, you said that not only are these cars at your shop, but you said you transport them to the track as well, which is, I think more like, you know, generally I think of that as more like a high-end service, so like a concierge service almost, right? But
right, kind of. Yeah, I mean, it's some people think it like full arrive and drive. It's, you know, only for the rich people, but it's honestly, it saves people money. You know, think of if you wanted to go racing and you had to buy your own truck, your own trailer, your own tools, and then you had to, you know, take off the extra time because you've got to tow your vehicle halfway across the country. We get to split that by five now because we've got a five place rig and another two place rig. So like if everyone takes that same amount of effort that they would have bought their own truck, their own trailer, and the time, and maybe just pay me a half, not even half that. It's probably a quarter of it or whatever. You know, it ends up being so much cheaper when you can just pay me and then save yourself the money you'd have to buy all that other stuff.
Yeah. No, I can definitely see it. And since, you know, you said it, you know, for the, for Pike's Peak, you had the you drove both. Well, you didn't drive personally, but you guys brought the five rig and the two rig to Pike's.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. That's
great. I say it does look pretty dope going down the road.
It does look cool. I mean, all the cars matching and stuff like that. Yeah. It looks pretty sweet.
It definitely turns a lot of heads. I don't know how many times we're starting to get passed by someone, just followed by them slowing down. You see them whip out their phones, get some pictures. Get the
Instagram picture, bro.
Yeah, it does look pretty cool.
Yeah, that's good for marketing. It's you know, all the cars have very similar liveries, those type of things. And I think that really does make it seem like people are missing out on something if they're not paying attention. You know what I mean? So that's definitely cool.
Yeah.
So, you know, the hard questions is, if you've got seven cars, you said you brought seven cars, and you've got one full-time person, does that person come with you to help all the time?
Yeah, sometimes he'll come with to the track, but for the events he can't make it, my sister is probably the most amount of help there. But then we'll also maybe hire just another guy to come help crew.
Gotcha. And have you ever, unfortunately, things break? Have you ever run into a situation where just too many things are broken and you can't fix everything before the next showing, if you will?
I've honestly been so fortunate that has not happened yet. I mean, we've obviously broken stuff,
right?
We've had stuff fixed in time, and I still kind of am very proud of this. There has never been, especially for a paying customer, there's never been something that has broken for them on track that has prevented them from racing or finishing a race.
Yeah, that's impressive. That's very cool.
Through, I mean, tracking that many cars, we kind of figure out what works, what doesn't work. So we've, you know, through either my car, I try to use my car or Tom's car as like almost the guinea pigs. We try stuff on our cars before telling customers to do it. So if something does fail, it's on one of us, not a paying customer.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's also very nice. And then since you've got so many S2000s, you can replicate across the board. Are most of the cars relatively replicated in terms of setup and, you know, parts, if you will?
Yeah, most are 90% identical. I mean, they're all K-swap S2000s. The big difference kind of on a lot of them just being, you know, maybe some suspension components or, you know, just little things. You know, some people want the best of the best, where some maybe have to be a little more budget conscious and can't afford, you know, $10,000 shocks or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much all the same. So we get to share spares and everything. You know, that makes things so much easier rather than carrying spares for eight different cars. I just get to carry one set of spares for pretty much everything.
Yeah. Do you carry more than one engine as a spare, since you have so many cars out there?
I only carry one engine, one trans, one diff. And we've been lucky that we haven't broken more than one per event.
Yeah.
But
the diffs. Yeah. I remember
diffs you guys and trans, said you risking, I mean, it.
Yeah. This is crazy.
Yeah. Probably.
I mean, it's going good. Let's knock on wood. Everybody happy, right? You know, whatever. But it, that's impressive and stuff. And it is nice to have similar cars so that you don't have to have 40 of everything, right? It's hard to have different types of cars and need all the spares for that and all. So it's definitely a good thing there. What people might not understand as well is that not only are you working on these cars, but you drive these cars.
Yeah. Yeah. That's kind of the, I think, something that I might have to change next year, because it does get pretty chaotic. I mean, you're trying to make sure six or seven different cars are all ready to go. And I mean, there's just so much always to do, and I'm always running around, and I kind of feel sometimes when I jump in the car, I don't, like, my head's not always in the right space. Like, I'm just trying to remember everything I did, and I got to jump in the car and race. And sometimes I don't feel like I'm getting to enjoy that whole process as much. So I might maybe take a step back from actually racing myself during GLTC next year, just so I can focus on cars. I mean, not that I'm going to stop driving. I'm going to still do lots of driving, just maybe not at GLTC weekends.
Sure. It still hurts.
A little bit. I don't know. I think I'm still going to have 90% of the fun I have on these Grid Life weekends.
People don't know how you're very competitive. So we'll see how, like, after the first event, we'll see how this goes.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
I'm not saying.
I mean, you could say this bullshit really right now about some. It's going to be okay, but it's not. Don't lie to me. You go come on my podcast and lie to me. That's fucked up.
Oh my God.
Are you drawn more to wheel to wheel than time attack?
For sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. Time attack is tough. Maybe I was doing it probably because I did it wrong. The last time I did it, I was doing it on an unlimited type car, which, you know, as you guys know, like you spend.
We're stupid. Yeah, we're stupid.
I think maybe the time attack cars of maybe this era were, I mean, a lot of the cars, let's be real. A lot of the time attack cars lately, especially street mod, even track mod. I mean, the guys are doing almost every session.
Yeah. They're getting better for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. And I probably would enjoy that more, but. Yeah, I really like the wheel to wheel aspect.
From Time Attack, do you ever feel like you met the potential of you and the car at a particular event?
No.
Yeah.
Never.
That's how we feel. But that's why it's disappointing.
Yeah. It always felt like you're, I don't know, driving a car with one hand behind your back half the time.
Yeah. I mean, people don't know, but Andy's even driven our car too. So there's a relationship there. He drove our car and tested it as well. And he obviously has his own Evo there, but we talked about that previously. But it's like, man, Time Attack is so unfulfilling. Mm-hmm. it's so backwards. So if you're driving wheel to wheel, are you happy? Like if you win, you're just like, who cares about times? Who put everything out? You know, whatever. I beat everybody on track. At this race, I'm happy. Is that you're good?
Yeah, you really don't. I don't. There's really not one time I came off track from GLTC race where I looked at my actual lap times.
Okay.
Or was overly concerned about lap times, anyways. But yeah, you're with wheel to wheel racing. You're racing against these people right now. You know, on these specific circumstances. You know, like conditions don't matter at that point. Like nothing else matters except for right now.
Yeah, and it's different because we talked about this before where I'm like, I want to beat everybody who's ever been there. And that doesn't matter with wheel to wheel. That just doesn't matter with GLTC. What matters is that you're present in that moment and you beat everybody at that race, which sounds pretty magical sometimes when I think about it.
Yeah. Plus you have the racecraft. You have a whole other element behind it. You know, you can't just be a fast driver. You have to know how to pass people and how to maybe defend, you know, without actual blocking because they don't allow that. There's just a whole nother element to it, and that part, you know, anytime there's something new, that's always to me it's more fun to learn new stuff.
Sure. So is there other plans to, you know, obviously you're in GLTC big time, is there plans to do other series? Is there plans to?
So, I mean, the big thing we've also been doing is Formula Drift stuff with Robert, which he just won Pro Spec this year. Thanks. that's kind of, I started doing drift stuff about 3 years ago, kind of at the same time as Robert started. We're just doing just small little local events and stuff. Nothing crazy, but he started doing the prospect stuff, and I've kind of had the intention of, or the ambitions to do more drift and maybe eventually do prospect and maybe pro. I don't know. We'll see. But,
so you're going to have your own car for that?
Yeah. I'm building just an LS powered FRS, kind of to the same spec that Robert built his BMW to, just cause it's a kind of a proven combo that we know. So. Yeah, that's kind of where I'm going to get my driver's outlet, I think, next year, is I want to focus more on drifting for myself.
And you're going to try to do that in the lower end of Formula D? Where would you do that?
First, I have to get an actual license. So I'd have to find like a local region that can give out an FD license. And then from there, then you can do pro spec, which is not super easy just to get in. You can't just like sign up for it. There's, you know, big long lists and hoops and lots of red tape.
I'm sure.
Yeah. So I don't know. It we'll see what happens. But I just want to refine my own driving more with drifting, and it's a whole new discipline of driving, and a whole new sport to learn, from the rules to everything. So,
I mean, you gotta learn the rules, but to say that you don't have a huge background in drifting because of ice racing and such.
For sure, ice racing has helped the driving. I mean, it's a very similar driving style, right? For sure, but
I like it better because there's time.
There you go. For
me, I like time. There you go. I'm gonna say it.
Fucking, here it is. Yeah, fucking drifting is fucking stupid. Literally, I fucking hate it.
There you go. There you go. Yeah.
You not like drifting?
He doesn't.
I can't do. I like parts of it, but I don't like judging. I don't like things that are judged. I feel like there's always mistakes.
Right. And for sure, there's the judging is still always part of it. But I think one thing I've learned this year, there's so much more to it than what it seems. And when you really, get into the inside of all of this, it's a lot of the judging you can really explain, I guess. Okay. And it's not so.
There's a reason.
Right. Once you start to make sense of it all, I think maybe that could make it a little more fun for you and not
palatable.
It's not 100% judged.
Sure.
It's like 85 to 90% actual like hard facts, and then there's that last 10-15% that is judged.
Andy, you are talking to a wall right now. He is not listening to anything you said. I've tried. Everybody has tried. It's just not going to happen.
We'll see. We'll see. I mean, maybe I'll follow you to an event and then I'll be like,
you see, he didn't say no to what I said.
I didn't say no. I didn't.
You should definitely come to an event, because when you come to an event and you start seeing stuff and start seeing how they score stuff.
But I need to see it from the inside, because we've helped plenty of drifters before. And then obviously we've been to Formula D events, but it'd be interesting to from an inside perspective, looking at a car that, I'm more involved in, maybe I can see it. But right now, God, I just can't see it. I don't know. Yeah, it's just so hard for me. It's hard for me.
There's definitely things that you kind of do get frustrated with, and you don't agree with the actual scoring, but
sure.
You just have to win and not make it questionable. You have to
You have to dominate. Yeah, he's not wrong.
No, there's no question here. He won.
I like that side. That sounds great to me. Okay, now he's getting me. He's speaking my language now.
It's like a time attack if you had to win by seconds and not tenths.
Right, exactly. Just completely destroy the competition where there's no question. I like that.
I'm telling you, though, there's a problem here that it's culturally, Mike, and myself included, we don't fit in with drifters.
No, that's the thing. So yes, at local events, for sure, there's that culture thing happening, and I completely don't get it. But you go to like Pro Spec and FP and stuff, like there is none of that. It's a lot of it. Yeah, it feels like you're walking around a track day paddock.
Yeah,
these guys are serious. They're not just slamming their cars super low and doing it for style. They're there for the right reasons.
They're doing something. Well, interesting. Yeah. Next year, whatever, when you get your car out, I'll have to come check it out and see if I don't want to completely blow my face off when I'm done.
And go for rides. If you've never ridden in a FD level type car, when you're doing, tandem drifts like 3 feet to the next guy at 100 miles an hour. I mean, dude, there's nothing like that.
Do you like that more than wheel to wheel?
Yeah. Yeah.
You do. Interesting.
Podcast over. this episode will never be released.
Yeah,
again, probably because it's just something new.
Sure. Yeah, but that's, yeah. I mean,
heard it that's here cool. First,
mm-hmm. You dude, heard it here first? No,
that's cool. You go for a ride and you tell me like that's not awesome.
It's I can understand how that would be very. To be clear, I'm not talking shit about the skill involved and all of that and the capability to even achieve that. That's not my problem. My problem is scoring it.
I'm with you there.
That's the hard part.
You don't get to, you don't get actual hard facts or hard data that you can say this person won because.
Yeah. I constantly talk about how to add enough data to it so that it would be like make me happy, like from an engineering, like, nerd off. And I get that that's not what other people would want. But so I feel like
that's part of the fun is it's not, is it is slightly judged,
Fine.
It's so cut and dry.
I get it. And that's what I'm saying. You just said it. You don't necessarily want it. And I get it. And I want 40 sensors on the car. So I know I can like look at my live stream and be like, man, his steering angle is this. And the yaw angle on the actual car is this. And the left front wheel is off the ground and the right front wheel is off the ground. And the diff's doing this. And I'm like, oh, man, that's so crazy. Right. Like from an engineering perspective, that's what I want. That just gave me an engineering hard on. And other people are like, that was a really good initiation. That was really good entry speed, all that stuff. And I'm and I get it. That's fine. It just I know I'm different and I know, you get it.
Yeah, we know you're broken. Got it. I understand.
I'm hard to deal with. I never said I wasn't hard to deal with.
Well, that's as not, director of cool, drifting's cool. I said it.
Yeah, we'll
on
have
behalf
to see.
Of Pro Off, that's what I'm have to say.
Yeah. Where would the first event be for the this FRS drifting mania?
I don't know. I want to have it done sometime this winter, so maybe bring it out on the ice actually.
Oh yes. I really want it. Like for those who have an ice race, you need to go ice racing. It's the coolest shit ever. I mean, like I said, it's drifting, but there's a time, so it's like rally, right? Where you time it, it's like a stage thing. And especially with the studs that Andy's team makes, like, oh my God. Like what was it? In the S2000, you did 1.5 Gs on ice or something? Like,
if the ice is like brand new. So if you're like the first one to the track and you get to drive it on at first when the ice is perfectly glare, you know, smooth, you can hit some crazy amount of grip. But once it gets rutted up, it usually settles down to about like 1 G. So it's kind of like the equivalent of race tires. But
1 G is like pretty good, but then like... When we went out there and we were doing, you know, we did a video in the Cobra, you know, it's called Sub-Zero Cobra. Andy drove a lot of that and I drove some of it. And like, that, I mean, 1.5 G on some of that shit. Like, that's insane.
Yeah. With a weird driving style. Because it's not like you're grip driving. You have to like slide the car around.
Right.
You're like essentially drifting.
Right. It is fastest doing stupid shit. And it's just like such a cool thing. And it makes you such a good driver. Especially later in the year, because the berms turn into ice, and if you hit them, it's not going to be a good day. So it definitely behooves you to be a good driver in those situations. But if you haven't been ice racing, out of all the types of racing, like I 100% recommend you get out there and try it one time at least, because it's cold and it sucks, but it's super cool.
Well, I guess to cap this all off, since we're running a little late on time, just wondering, like, what do you see the end goal for ASM being?
Yeah, future. What's next?
I mean the end goal I really have no idea. Is the end goal. But the next thing I think for us, besides getting into maybe some of the drift stuff, that's a whole thing I'm super intrigued with, and want to learn everything I can about. We're also gonna try getting into maybe more of like the 8.6 chassis stuff. So like the FRS, BRZs, both the older chassis and the new chassis. We've done like Dana's K swap in his, and then I think that's going to be another, the older 8.6 chassis is going to be another super common swap chassis because you can get those for cheap and not many people like the FA motor. So we'll probably start focusing maybe a little bit more on that swap. And then also the newest, the GR8.6, just kind of learning that a little bit more, the new motor that comes in, that's a little bit better. Said a little bit better. Just kind of learning that chassis a bit more. You know, S2s are kind of dying. You know, they don't make them anymore, so they're only becoming less. So trying to find the next chassis to really kind of jump on and really develop. So that's probably the next big thing here. Other than that, I mean, we're running out of shop space, so we need a bigger building.
Holy.
That's always a good problem.
Yeah.
It's always a good problem.
Yeah. Other than that, just try to take it one day at a time.
All right. Yeah. No, I mean, obviously, like you said from the beginning, it just kind of happened and continues to happen. And obviously, there's growth there, and that's great. And continue on the path. You're doing a good job because it just keeps getting better. So moving on up, I guess.
Yeah. Moving somewhere.
It sounds so easy, but it is so hard. You work a lot. People need to know you're always working, and then you're always at the track. Like, it's a lot. It's a lot of work. But
I am hoping
put the time in.
That's one thing I'm really, from more of a personal level, trying to figure out how to balance that a little bit better. Because yeah, it's, I mean, for the last 3-4 years, it's pretty much wake up, start working right away. You know, I start my day usually doing just like office book work type stuff. And then by 9 o'clock, I'm in the shop, working in the shop till 6-7 o'clock. Then I go home, eat, and then I'm back on my computer again, you know, answering messages and emails, go to sleep, and then wake up and do it all over again. So trying to figure out a way to better manage myself personally, because it's not going to be able to last forever.
Yeah, it's not sustainable. And you need help and all these things, and it's hard to do, for sure. People don't realize that the business side is the hard side a lot of the time, and then the fun side is, you know, it can be managed, but the business side kind of takes away a lot of it. So that's the big thing.
Yep.
All right. Well, we really appreciate you being on, giving us a lot of insight on the, you know, from the IT to the garage, to the shop, to all these things.
Yeah.
So super cool.
Let the people know where they can find you.
Yep.
You can usually find us at the track.
All right,
but online, you know, with the besides the track, if you guys don't know where
present,
the
track winning all the time, motherfuckers, that's where you can find us. Damn right.
You can find us on the street.
Jeez. Okay,
so where else on the internets can we find you?
On the internets, the easiest place is probably just our website, asmotorsports.us, and email, which can be found right through that website, or probably Facebook. I don't know. I think it's just AS Motorsports, maybe, on Facebook.
They'll find it. We'll be able to link it in the description, so that's fine. Perfect. Yeah, don't worry about it. Awesome. And then and anybody you want to shout out before we go?
Oh, I mean, really just the entire ASM team, you know, all the drivers, all the people that have helped crew along the way. I mean, that's really the ones that make this all possible. You know, Tom came up here a little over a year ago. So he's been a big part in kind of growing everything, you know, helping out with stuff. My sister's been helping a lot at the shop. She's been a super big help. And then the newest employee here, he's been working here for about a year, Dakota. He's been a big help too. You know, a lot of times I've been away at the, you know, either helping with Robert do Formula Drift stuff or at the next track, and Dakota's back here prepping the next cars for the next round of events. So yeah, it really takes a full team. Got to have the right people around you.
Very cool. Very cool. All right. Well, we appreciate you coming on. We appreciate you giving us the story, the history, all the insight and such. And if you guys have any questions for Andy, feel free to ask them to us, or obviously shoot him a message, and he'll help you out with any of those exciting needs, especially if you have a S2000 or an FRS, apparently. That's where you're going. So hit Andy up, and we'll see you out there.
Psst, it's that time again, boys. I need those goddamn reviews. You can say that Devin is forcing you to do them, or you can leave some genuine feedback, and I'll be sure to read them and get them back to the boys. In the meantime, you can join our Facebook group, which is Professional Awesome Technical Forum. You can follow us on Instagram at Professional Awesome Racing, and we have a Facebook regular page with the same name. But until then, we'll talk to you later, and we really appreciate you listening.